Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, we are taking you back to a simpler time. Back when things were easy. We're talking about Captain America, the First Avenger, back in 2011. All that emotive of this that we have no control over.
I have no idea what that means.
I don't know.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
And I am Jeff Randall.
And I'm Ashley Coffin.
Now you got to put the weird emphasis on it, Ashley.
Come I was
on.
Like confused.
We talked about this.
I'm Ashley Coffin?
Who put the question mark on the teleprompter?
Speaking of weird intonations, one of the things I love about this movie, just to get right into it, because everything's going to remind me of this movie for the next 4 days, is the weird inflection the Germans have when they speak English. Like, they put the, like, sort of German, like, lilt or whatever, like, I don't know, whatever you would call it when in German, just the sort of melodic tone of German on top of the English language. I love it so much. And I don't even know if it's right. Like, I have no idea if they're doing it correctly, but, like, it just makes me feel, it just gives this movie the signature thing where, like, Arnim Zola, like, when he says, one of the lines when he says, why do you, it doesn't matter if he's mad, because he can do it. Like, it's just, like, it's so weird.
Yeah, Stanley Tucci bringing it home, too.
Stanley Tucci's so good.
All these non-German actors with their German accents making it just a fantastic film.
So good. And I'm sure I'm sure there's German people. Please, our German listeners, write in and tell us how inaccurate it is. But, like, I love it. I love it so much. It's just weird and cool, and I just love it so much.
Speaking on accents, I love Hugo Weaving's just ridiculous in this movie. Like, there's no other word for it. He went ham and devoured the scenery. Like, there were no set pieces left because he was chewing on all of them.
With those big old teeth.
Oh my God, it was ridiculous.
He makes every movie better, I think.
Yep.
Absolutely. 100%.
I remember not loving this the first time I saw it, and I can't remember why, but I also remember a lot of people saying it took him a second, and I think it's funny to think back to how many people didn't want Chris Evans to be Captain America, because we really had kind of a little bit of a bad taste in our mouth with the Fantastic Four movies.
Yeah.
And it's funny to think back to it. Yeah, and if you think back, you're like, oh, wait, this has always kind of happened. Everybody's always complained about everything, and then we watched it, and we're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
He is Captain America.
He is an actor. He can do other things than the characters he's already done. Crazy, right?
It's so funny when I hear about things like that, because before we started this podcast, I was not a big internet, like, following the discourse of whatever character is, like, cast in whatever, and, like, I just had no idea. I just watched the movies. And I still am kind of that way. But because of this podcast and because of the network and because of Multiverse News, I hear a lot more these days, but, like, about what are people thinking of Pedro for, you know, Reed Richards. So it's so funny that we would still hear you guys talk about, like, those internet uproars before I knew what was going on in the world.
Wait, you didn't hear about the possibility of Triple H being Thor?
Yeah,
before it came out.
No,
do you remember that?
No.
The internet was all over. Triple H was on the short list, and I was like, no.
It was just because of his hair and his build.
Yep, his hair and his build. That was the only thing. I'm like, he can't act. And, like, no. I wanted Alexander Skarsgård.
I did as well. But then,
after his stint in True Blood, when we saw him, like,
Eric Northman,
jacked, you know?
Let me tell you something, though. Then Chris Hemsworth came out of nowhere.
Came out of nowhere.
Oh, okay. You can stay. You can definitely stay.
Oh, man. And then Chris Evans surprised the hell out of all of us. Because we were like, he can't be anything more than goofy Johnny Storm.
Oh, my God. Well, he was whipped cream from Not Another Teen Movie. He's like, you want a banana split? And that was all I could think of him was him walking out of there with that banana stuck up his ass.
Yeah.
And I was like, that guy's going to be Captain America?
That guy is Captain America.
We kind of burst right into it, but what were you saying? You said this move back when things were easy, Jeff?
Like, back when things were simpler.
Simpler, okay.
There was no such thing as a sacred timeline. Yeah. It was just MCU. And we had no idea what we were in for.
Yeah, there was no such thing as this world, this expansive universe that is this movie. This movie was just now starting out, and it's such a cool one because it does this great thing where it does the great solo movie kickoff, but it's already so interconnected with the other movies.
Right.
Thor just came out at this point, and we're watching them like have the Yggdrasil tree, have the Tesseract in it, and talk about how it's the crown jewel of Odin's throne room. And then you've got Howard Stark in this movie using tech that is, when he has his bike and he's like going through the German countryside and using his like little whatever, he uses a flamethrower at one point, and I was like, that is almost the same, it's like sound effect and like fire effect that Tony uses when he sprays the fire flamethrower in the first Iron Man, like these little connections, because I'm sure Howard built that bike for him, you know.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, it had all kinds of add-ons and attachments, and like the rope that like connected to two trees and took out people in a real, like, I don't know how to say it other than like, that's a weird James Bond kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
Like the gadgetry and whatnot. Like he just happened to luck out and it catch two trees like immediately and like sunk into them. Like the odds of that happening are surprisingly low, like shockingly low, but it happens every time.
And this movie just has like so many people involved that are so responsible for it. Like, obviously we talked about Chris Evans, but also Haley Atwell is just killing it. But then behind, Tommy Lee Jones. Like, I underestimate how good he is. And then I rewatched this movie. Like, he is not the go-to choice. Making a superhero movie these days, and you want a comedy relief character, you do not go with, like, a seasoned actor like Tommy Lee Jones. You know what I mean? Yep. Like,
that's the thing, is like, he's especially like in you know, you remember back to MIB, he was the straight guy, and he was sort of the straight man this time, but like he had such quip and vigor and character,
so many good lines. Like,
he's perfect sergeant. He's got the voice for it, he's got the attitude. I love him.
Colonel freaking Phillips. And like the way that he's like, when you brought a 90-pound asthmatic onto my army base, like, you know, he's being super serious, but you're like, ha, Tommy, you're so silly.
He's still skinny.
Well, he tosses the grenade and he's like,
he's still skinny.
He's still skinny.
Also, he's making me cry when he's working out. Yeah. Like, I just
so much. Well, he's making me cry.
Something that it's not like I never noticed this before, but like, It's interesting. We're doing this rewatch, you know, 15 years later, and it's like how these movies feel different. And one of the things I always thought about Captain America was he's just the good guy. You know, he's the good guy. Right. Like, the only thing I thought about when I think about Captain America in this movie is him jumping on the grenade and him standing up to the bully. Like, that's who he is. But the other side of that coin of who he is someone looking to prove himself and feeling like the world doesn't respect him and feeling like he wants to be the kind of man that his father was and the kind of person that his mother was. They both died in this war. Like, he has all this stuff to prove. And in many respects, Tommy Lee Jones' character is the person he has to prove all that to at multiple points. He sort of has to keep proving himself to Tommy Lee Jones as like the naysayer of the movie and just keeps like making fun of him. And there's such a great moment when he's finally convinced. He brings in all those guys from the prison. He saves this entire squadron. I'm getting choked up thinking about it because I'm going to do that this entire podcast. But he brings in all these people into the camp, and Tommy Lee Jones looks at Haley Atwell and goes, "Faith, huh?
Faith.
Like it's like something he'd never considered to have faith in a person before. It's such a beautiful delivery of that line. Faith, huh?
Well, I mean, like, right then he had just had a conversation with her that, like, you know, we lost our one super soldier because you had a crush.
Yeah, being a real curmudgeon.
Yeah, and she was like, no, I had faith. And then, like, he calls back to that, like, almost immediately with Faith, huh? But then, like, he was also, like, you see him change. You see the turn where, like, Steve says, I'd like to submit myself for disciplinary action. And he's just like, that won't be necessary.
Not today.
Yeah. And that, we talked about that recently. It was something. Man, I'm blanking. I don't even remember what movie we were talking about where someone doesn't get prosecuted for what they do. But anyway.
Pretty much all of the MCU.
Yeah. Well, something happens and they go, for political reasons, we're not going to prosecute you. I can't. Something we watched recently. Lord. My brain. But anyway, in this, like, I liked one of the things we talked about on that episode when we were talking was, like, it's the heroic thing to step in and say, like, yeah, I did the thing. I did the wrong thing. Like, I broke the rules, but I am here to submit myself for punishment. You know what I mean? And that's just the heroic thing. And Cap always freaking does the heroic thing. But I found it really interesting that he also has that other side to him, the guy trying to prove himself. And I don't know how that... I don't know that that continues to affect his character after this movie. I'm trying to really, like... I'm looking forward to seeing in his character in the next movies if he has that sort of, like... After this movie, it's more about him trying to decide which master to serve, you know, with, like, the Hydra reveal and everything else. But, like, I found that an interesting wrinkle in his character that they put a lot of focus on in the first movie, but I don't know that it really ever comes back as, like, him feeling not good enough or whatever. Or, like, because he is Captain America after all.
Yeah.
It's, like, one of the first things Bucky says to him. Like, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I really like this one, because I think it is a perfect origin story movie, because we do sit for a minute with him as Steve Rogers. Like, it does take a while for him to actually become Captain America.
Before he actually gets taller.
Yeah.
Well, and that's something that I could not watch this movie without thinking about the conversations we've been having around the Marvels and how it kind of refuses to have a quiet moment. As much as I still enjoy the Marvels... Like it, and this doesn't just the Marvel's problem. It's the Ragnarok problem. It's sort of like movies that I enjoy, but they refuse to have a quiet moment. Mm-hmm. And like this one had quiet moments, like in spades. I mean, like the whole first half of the movie is really slow. And I wonder if Marvel's in a tough spot because they want to keep modern audiences. And this feels like a throwback. This feels like, an old movie. Even though it's not that old, it feels older than it is because they got Joe Johnston to direct it, and it feels like a lot of his older stuff.
And it was a period piece.
Exactly. So yeah.
Felt even older.
Yeah, they shot it like a period piece, too.
It's funny that the movie takes this turn and slows down a bit, even like right before the third act when he joins the War Bond traveling musical. Mm-hmm. Because then it stops, and you do like this whole musical number, and it kind of gets you caught up. But they do have a lot of weird, like, musical number, like interludes, or like what you're going on. I'm like, God, this movie's long.
it was slow at the beginning, but then it was just like montage.
Exactly. Once he is Cap, it's montage after montage.
Yeah, it's montage after montage. And I remember when it first came out, that was like one of the main things people didn't like about the movie is because they were like, it's just montages. I'm like, do you really want to go through like him going, like you want the whole movie to be about him on USO tours and then like not get to any actual like Captain America-ing?
You know what I will say? I did notice this time, this watch, that I think that's where he learned to do his motivational speeches as the movies go on. Like, this is where he got good at it. And, like, that's why he's always the go-to for the speeches, because he learned really doing musical theater. I was like, yes! I feel seen.
Yep.
Speaking of musical theater, and this movie, that Star-Spangled Man is Marvel's first original song. You know, like they go on. Yeah. Agatha is wonderful. Then they have that great Avengers musical in Hawkeye.
You say great. I think you mean the other thing.
Nope, I don't. I love it. I mean, it's intentionally bad, but like it's a beautifully funny scene. I think Star-Spangled Man is awesome, though.
Oh, yeah. Star-Spangled Man with a Plan is so good.
Yeah. And that whole montage is great.
I've knocked out Adolf Hitler over 200 times.
Yeah. They were like, pardon me?
What?
That one, and then the Howling Commandos montage. The Howling Commandos montage actually made me think, did they shoot more of this? Because there's a bunch of... I couldn't tell if they shot more of that or if that was always the plan, because there's so many missions in there that I was like, It's a 2-hour movie. It's possible there were a couple of cut scenes that they like used some of this, or they were just going for like, let's hit the highlights of sort of Cap's career in the comics. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he destroys this big tank. He does this big thing. He does it, you know, it's really effective at like making him feel like this famous epic hero. And then it's just so good, man. It's so well done.
Well, I think it also serves to point out that like, even though Cap is a superhero, the war that he's fighting against Nazi Germany, but also Hydra and Red Skull, like, it's not a quick thing. Mm-hmm. It's not something that like he just shows up and they're done. Like, he's a super soldier, but he's still got to put in the work to fight the war and like win several battles to get, you know, to the end goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be a super soldier, you need to put in the work. And by work, I mean sleep. Okay, this transition got away from me.
That was a great transition.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Beam Dream Powder is the sponsor of the show today. It is a healthy hot cocoa for sleep. Without sleep, you can have weight gain problems, mood issues, poor mental health, low productivity, all kinds of bad things. You need your sleep.
I have that with sleep. I don't need it without sleep. God, yeah, man.
You don't need those problems to be exacerbated without sleep. Yeah. Without sleep. Well, getting good sleep is key to being the best version of yourself. It's like the serum.
The super soldier serum?
Yeah, totally. It is.
It's a super sleepy serum. I know that much.
Yeah, listen, sleeping through the night is just something that not all of us have the privilege of doing. I hardly ever sleep all the way through the night, but this stuff does it. And that's so rare to find something that's also delicious that also makes you sleep through the night.
That's amazing. I love that you have that experience. It's so cool.
I know. It's so hard.
Like we've talked about in the past, I'm not as hard of a sleeper as you, but I still find it like really, really, it gets me there quicker. Like I just can, like it's my routine that I sip on that and I just hit the pillow and I'm out. Instead of sort of like turning over and watching TV for 2 hours and then falling asleep. You know what I mean? Like I let my, it tells my body ahead of time, we're going towards sleep. We're doing it. And it's a wonderful thing. And today our listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their best selling healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Now available in delicious seasonal flavors like cinnamon cacao, sea salt caramel, and white chocolate peppermint. Better sleep has never tasted better. Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, melatonin, and nano-CBD to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. That's a lot of things.
It is a lot of things.
Some real Erskine magic happening over here.
I want to try that sea salt caramel.
Yeah, me too. Oof, yeah. A recent clinical study revealed that Dream helped 93% of users wake up feeling more refreshed, and 93% reported that Dream helped them get a more restful night's sleep.
That's the most important thing, because, like, I could go take sleeping pills, and you can't sleep through the night, the doctors are like, here you go, try these, and then it feels like you got hit by a truck when you try to wake up in the morning, and your whole day is groggy. Like, that's not my favorite thing. Yeah. That's why I really like Dream.
You may have been unconscious, but you may not have been asleep.
Right? Yeah. Oh, it's like, well, then I won't actually fall asleep until 3 a.m. And then that's it. You know, you're like, well, checking out for 8 hours per the pills, but they didn't kick in fast enough because it's a time release. Oh, it's just a mess.
Yeah, it is. And this works in so many ways. Not only the wonderful ingredients that help for sleep, but also, as we've talked about, the ritual of drinking it and feeling like your body's winding down. If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, take advantage of their biggest sale of the year and get up to 50% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/MCUpod. The discount is automatically applied at checkout, no code necessary. That's shopbeam.com/MCUpod for up to 50% off. Get that super sleepy serum. Do it.
Super sleepy serum.
So back to Cap. I found the, like, not only the on-screen talent to be amazing, but we mentioned, you know, Joe Johnston, who directed this. They just chose so well, because it's not only a period piece and it feel like meant to be the 40s, but it's also this period piece that's meant to look like the 80s and 90s movies. Like, it really feels like a throwback, and it feels like The Rocketeer, honestly, like, which is one of those movies.
Oh, yes.
It looks like The Rocketeer as
well. It looks like The Rocketeer. Yeah, and it also looks like Indiana Jones, like tons of Indiana Jones influence, which Joe Johnston did not do one of the Indiana Jones movies, but he did do a lot on the young Indiana Jones series. So, like, I feel like he really captured that, like, it's like the 90s view of the 40s, or like the 80s view of the 40s.
Well, that's why the villains are the best. Like, you're talking, the first, like, Nazi villains, they always have them. They look like sharp in their outfits. They have the coolest tech. They have the coolest cars. They have the coolest stuff, but they have that, like, mountain base, like the real mustache twirling, like, mountain base with the huge windows. Yeah. You're like, how did you get up there? Yep. Okay, no, whatever.
Speaking of James Bond,
like, climbing mountains.
It's so James Bond. They're like, oh, welcome to Steve Rogers, you know? Yeah. It's so,
I am on a very tight schedule.
Yes, I am as well, blah. You know, they're just so funny. Not the scratch doctor.
I love that not a scratch doctor line. I'd kind of forgotten it, and like,
Where am I going to sit?
I was like, it is way too cold to drive that goddamn car anywhere.
Yeah, right. The top down.
Like, those villain voices are so key and interesting and fun, as we talked about. But, like, then it cuts to Cap and Bucky, and they're just chatting like pals, and it feels very modern. And I think that's something they did really cleverly with this movie, where, like, yeah, Cap says some old-timey stuff sometimes, but him and Bucky's relationship and their sort of informal voice sounds very much like modern times. It doesn't feel dated, but they let the villains kind of carry the weight of that sort of, like, Shakespearean dialogue and stuff.
Like, the villains get to be caricatures, but the heroes you get to identify with because they feel like real people.
Exactly.
Yeah. My
exactly.
favorite was when they're getting out of there and Red Skull was like, our forces are outmatched. And then he's like, click. Click. I'm like, I want to be a villain because I want to click all of those buttons. He just starts clicking all of the, he's pushing buttons, clicking switches. I'm like, what is he doing? It looks really fun.
That made me like really wonder about like the engineering and design of those bases, because like that was him basically just saying like, all right, well, we have to blow it all up. And I'm like, so that means that when they built this place, like, the engineers included explosives just everywhere.
Yeah.
Just like, all right, so we got to build in the bombs, hope they don't explode, but also make sure they do explode when we need them to explode.
Yeah, they had to do that, and they had to install the sharks with the laser. Heads.
Yep.
Up in Antarctica, wherever they were. Wherever they were.
Well, and that whole scene, Hugo Weaving did not like this role for some reason, and I really have never really got a sense of why. There's probably more information out there to look into, but he talks about how he never wanted to return. And, like, I hate it because even though I think, just speculation, they didn't give him much to do. And that's kind of the thing with Marvel in the first phase one. They focus so much on building the hero well, they ignore the villain. You know, they really don't give the villain much to do. And he has very little of a character, very, very, very small amount of characterization for Red Skull. So there's not much to work with. But everything he does so well and so interestingly. And you were talking about him flipping those switches. There's just like a purposefulness in his movement in that moment, but then he's so powerful in his on-screen presence. But then you get to a scene where he's about to get to the Tesseract, and there's a moment I really love where Red Skull, he's enacting his plan to become ruler of the world. He's about to betray the Führer and all this stuff, and there's a moment where he goes and he knows the Tesseract, he sees the button to, like, on that snake's eye, and the camera focuses on his hand, and he reaches to the button, and he stops and pulls his hand back. Like, this, like, moment of, like, reluctance, and then he touches it. And it's, like, that is such a... It adds this tension to it, and it adds this, like, mystery to it. It just, like, feels... It feels like, again, Indiana Jones, but, like, it also gives him sort of, I don't know, this, like, reluctance to do the thing he's about to do. And I just think Hugo Weaving does awesome with all of the little bit he gets to do is awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's why, like, even the Nazis were like, hey, Red Skull, you're being a little extra, even kind of for us. I think we're going to need you to take it down a bit. Oh, no, you're going to... Oh, you have poof away guns, which are awesome, by the way.
Yep. Yeah, they are.
When they're like, thank you for proving just how mad you are. And he's like, he's sitting there counting them as he's like programming the thing to blast them away.
Yep.
He's like, oh, I gotta fire a few shots. Yeah. How tall are you again?
I love that scene so much. And then, speaking of that, like the people blow up in this terrifying fashion when they get hit with those guns, and it's pretty brutal.
It's like War of the Worlds. They're like poof.
Yeah. It totally is like
War of the Worlds. It looks like they get dusted. But like, yeah. Knowing what we know now about the Tesseract, like the Tesseract is about transportation. It's the space stone. It's moving mm-hmm. things from one place in space to another, or changing their relationship with space in a weird way. So like, we thought for the longest time, once we learned that like those were people that were just getting like sent somewhere else in the galaxy or like somewhere else in space. And it still kind of looks like that, because it looks like they get dusted, but it also looks like their person just goes through that like cloud that the Tesseract does for Thanos.
Interesting.
Like they just get swallowed by it.
Swallowed.
I don't think I've thought about it that way. Maybe we did in the past. But it seems though that like the Tesseract does that, and clearly it does, because Red Skull. We did just speculate that beams for years. Up. He beams yeah. up. Like, you see him go away. And we were speculating for years, where is he? When's he going to show up? We talked about him showing up so many times before he did. But with that, they extract power from the Tesseract, as far as we understand it. Like, that little...
Yeah.
So it's not actually... that gun isn't actually using the Tesseract. It's using, like, that battery.
It's using energy.
They created. Yeah.
It's using energy that was extracted from the Tesseract, which is what Captain Marvel uses,
mm-hmm.
like, to power her, basically.
Yes.
Right. So, you know my gripe? It's actually with the Avengers movie, and I don't know if anybody else... I might just be stupid, but I remember being really confused when the Avengers came out, because Loki's scepter is the Mind Stone, but in his scepter, it shoots blue, which looked just like the Tesseract and the Space Stone.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really confusing that was not the same stone that they were using in the Avengers, because it's blue the whole time.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, I don't get it.
It was inside a blue gem.
Right, but we never see it. They never show us that it's like yellow or orange or whatever, whatever we get to see it being.
They don't show us that until Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When Ultron takes it out.
Very confusing for me in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very confusing.
We don't even know until Age of Ultron that it is the Mind Stone.
A different stone?
Right?
Okay.
The Mind Stone.
In Avengers, and I don't think they knew that when they were making Avengers, which is probably why they didn't color code it. Because, like, he's using, and we kind of talked about it. I always say this, like, we've talked about this before, but like, we've talked about so many things before, because we've been doing this a long time. But like, one of the things we talked about was like, so Thanos sends Loki to get the Tesseract. Like, that's why he goes to Earth. But he gives him another Infinity Stone to do it. It's almost like a fishing maneuver. Like, he's like, I'm going to give you, here's the bait stone, and you're going to go down and use it to get the other stone. It's like, whatever, I don't know. It's weird.
It's that whole, like, you got to spend money to make money kind of situation.
Exactly.
Thanos is too trusting. Actually, well, I guess Loki was doing exactly what he was supposed to, so I don't know.
Well, he is too trusting.
He tried.
Loki listened to him, but Ronan didn't. You know, Ronan did the exact, like, basically the same thing. He sent Ronan after a stone, and Ronan just used it himself.
Yeah.
And then got wrecked.
He got wrecked. Oh, but speaking of those weapons and how brutal they look, this movie does tend to, like, kill people. Which is like, unlike a lot of the other Marvel movies, not that no one dies, but like a lot of times it's like everyone's knocked out or everyone's a robot or an alien, so you don't see people dying. But this movie, people get gunned down, but yeah. I thought you would really enjoy the moment, Ashley, when the Hydra agent falls through the propeller.
Oh, yeah.
Complete blood mist.
That red mist.
And I mean, it doesn't even cut away. It's like you see him go...
Yeah. I was like, ooh, that's when I feel like we realized that, like, oh, Marvel's not afraid to just push it a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little. They got one little toe in there. They're like, let's see how they do with this.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Let's see how they do with the red mist.
Let's push it a little farther.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure anything gets that bloody. Well, yeah, I don't know. I was going to say until Multiverse of Madness almost, but then, like, we kept thinking it was bloodier than it was, because that one scene is oil, not blood. You know what I mean?
Like, they did a really good job, like, hiding it.
Yeah. In the trailers, we were like, oh, she looks covered in blood. And then we're like, oh, no.
She's
not at all.
Drenched.
putting heads to bed. That's my Wanda. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about? I think the CGI for Steve Rogers still holds up really well.
Oh yeah,
it looks a little weird at first. But yeah, when he's just a little guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry, I thought.
But it starts to look good.
It does.
Yeah, it's.
It doesn't bother me that much.
It doesn't spend as much time on him, like being shirtless and scrawny. Mm-hmm. Like it. You know, they. It looks like they just kind of modeled him after another, like, you know, not gaunt person, but like another small framed person. You know, like. It looks like it was just kind of an easy transition to be like, let's take the model for that guy and swap.
It's not like making them younger or whatever, like they've been doing. Yeah. You can kind of see something's off with that. But this, I was like, this really checks out for 2011.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's that thing. It's basically just got to cover the scene well, you know? It's like, it's an actual actor acting the part, and it's two actual actors acting the part. It's kind of practical effects with just a little CGI help instead of... You know, just creating like a scrawny version of Chris. Like if they had just done him full CGI, it would have looked really bad at this time.
Yeah, yeah, it looks so strange.
Mm-hmm.
And like, Hayley Atwell being so young in this one compared to what we've recently seen her in, I was like, oh my God, she's a little baby.
They all look like babies. Chris Evans, he hadn't grown into his nose yet. My little widow baby, but like, because he does have that like profile, but it looks, he just looks like Captain America. I was like, geez.
Yep.
And I love the scene in the car when he's like, oh, I just need to find the right girl to dance with. I'm like, dude, she's into you, Steve. God, you're just not getting the social cues.
And she's like, you just have no idea how to talk to women. He's like, I think this is the longest conversation I've had with one.
I dislike the scene where he gets caught making out with Natalie Dormer. I mean, I don't blame him. At all, but like, you know, the speech in the car about like, you know, oh, I don't know what to do, and then not knowing, you know, knowing your crush is in the other room. I don't know, it's a bad look. I don't think Steve would do it, but I'm also a woman, so tell me if that was out of character for someone as hot as Natalie Dormer, because he like kisses her back. He doesn't even try to like be like, oh, you know, like, oh, this is cute, but you know, he's like into it.
Well, in his defense, he is a bit of an idiot when it comes to, like, interacting with women.
Mm-hmm.
And she is very attractive. So, like, I think more than anything, he was just surprised and didn't know how to say no. Because, he's never been in that position before.
Well, and like, I don't think there's anything to say he wouldn't also just want it. You know, like, he's...
Sure.
He has more of a sex drive than we give him credit for. We know that he, like... got with some USO, a lady during the USO days, too. But, like, and him and he likes Carter, but, like, they don't have... It's not like they're in a relationship at that point. They're just kind of flirtatious.
She comes in there after that, like, she couldn't care if she killed anybody else in that room when she at the shield. That's some real Scorpio energy right there. Blam, 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 blam. Oh, I'm not that into you, but I'm going to kill you right now. Or maybe six other doctors, but I don't care.
She was taking out so much rage on that shield.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't even hear. She didn't even hear that it, like, absorbs all vibrations. She wasn't there for the conversations.
No.
He's just like, hey, what do you think? And she's like, I'm going to shoot at you. And we're going to see how good that shield actually is.
Yeah. Or, so you know, the 10 other people in the room doesn't matter about them.
Nope. Yep.
You're fondueing. It's not my fault. And I love that Tony's like, that's just cheese and bread.
Yeah, Howard.
He's like, oh.
Yeah,
it's just so good. Cheese and bread, my friend. Just
cheese and bread, my friend. Such a good line. One line I really like with the relationship of those two is it just says so much about Steve's character. When he knocks her over in the street, he goes to rescue her. She's trying to fire at the Hydra agents, and they're about to run over her.
Yeah,
and he pushes her out of the way. I know, she did not have that. Or she says, I had it. And in any other movie with any other sort of like macho character that's like big and muscular, he would have been like, I saved your life. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Or something. And he just goes, sorry, and keeps running. Sorry. Like, he saved her life, but then like,
apologizes
because she's like, that's not what I wanted, and he's like, well, I apologize then. I'm sorry, I would have done different if I'd known.
My bad. Wreck this guy.
That whole scene makes my feet hurt so bad. Could you imagine like having him run like that barefoot?
Yes. Yeah. And then when he crashes through the window, through the, and it's like there's the glass shards
girl, no.
everywhere, and like he's still running through that. I'm like, bro, you're giving me real Die Hard vibes right now.
Yeah. My favorite is the kid, though, that gets thrown. And how often do I say that? That kid that gets thrown in the water. He's like, go get him. I can swim.
Go get him. I can swim.
Yeah, idiot people.
So good.
And I love that kid was fighting against that guy the whole time. Like,
yeah.
Let me go. And like, yep. Hitting on him and everything.
And I'm like, where is your mother? You know, they didn't even, she was like, they took him. Oh no, I guess I don't have any kids anymore. You know?
Yay. That sounds like a real Ashley-ism.
Yeah. I didn't see her come after or try to stop it. She was like, oh no. Uh-oh.
She did. Like, she was yelling.
Yeah,
don't
that's
hurt
it.
Him.
No, somebody stop him.
Hey, big, strong, muscular, blonde-haired specimen of a man.
No shoes wearing God.
Like, can you run over there and save my boy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He needs a new daddy. cyanide pills, man. Cyanide tooth pills are always hardcore. That's my favorite, when people just are like, no,
yeah.
Cyanide pills are the best. Like, how scared would you be 24/7 having that in your mouth mm-hmm. all the time?
Yeah.
It's really crazy, too, that the Hydra agents are all that loyal to Red Skull. Like, I get it. You're loyal on the battlefield and around a lot of other people, but there's, like, until Zola, no one, they can't take anyone alive.
I'd be more afraid of what he was going to do to me.
Mm.
He's going to peel my skin off or, you know,
yeah.
some Nazi stuff.
There's some Nazi stuff.
Terrible people.
Please don't do anything unnatural.
It's like, have you seen him without his face?
Have you seen him without
it's his face? It's a masterpiece. No. I love, though, that Red Skull was like, he was saying to Steve, like, you're afraid of it, like, you're fighting against that we are gods among men. And he's like, I stand here, or here I am, unafraid of it. But like, bro, you were just wearing the like
mm-hmm.
face
mm-hmm.
of yourself. Like, you were just wearing that to hide this red craziness before you took it off. And like, now you're flaunting, like, oh, here I am,
unafraid. The Fuhrer doesn't like seeing it, man. He's like, mm. ugh, ew.
Call it what it is, exile.
He has an interesting sort of side story, too, with his sort of inferiority complex that he has, because he's constantly, like, he really wants to, like, defeat Captain America because, like, Erskine gave him these powers, and he wants to know that he's jealous. He's really jealous of Captain yeah. America. And he also, like...
I was the first.
Yeah,
I was I'm everything the that kid. Daddy wanted me to be, and look at you, you know?
Yeah, when he says, Erskine said you were insane, he looks just furious.
He feared my genius.
Mm-hmm. He's really, really sensitive, and I think it kind of parallels, and it goes back to, like, why Hugo Weaving, and, it, you know, we've talked about in each one of these episodes lately, where we're reviewing the Infinity Saga, what would we change? Like, is there anything we'd change? And the one thing I probably would change is giving a little more meat to Hugo yeah. Weaving, because, like, I love Hugo Weaving. And there's a really great parallel there between him proving himself and Red Skull, even though Red Skull's in power and needing to do the same thing. Like, he is still feels like he needs to prove himself and, like, show the world that he's in charge and stuff. There's an inferiority thing happening there. And even though Steve Rogers has everything to prove and has all these things in his way, he still is constantly trying to do the right thing. And I was thinking a lot about it. And there's that moment where he's just doing what he's supposed to do, even though he goes at the beginning of the movie, he is, like, breaking the law. Like, he's breaking the law, breaking the rules, but he's just trying to do the right thing. But then after that, he kind of, like, listens to them. He does the USO tour. He does the thing. He keeps going. But then, like, there's the moment where he decides to, like, say screw it and go save the captives. And it's when he finds out Bucky's in trouble. And it's mm-hmm. when he finds out there's a bunch of... And he actually thinks Bucky's dead when he goes.
Right.
He says, yeah, no, he's been killed in action. But what about the rest of them? And he's, like, he's willing to go because he thinks it's the right thing to do. He wants to save these people. And I don't know, it's just... The parallel, there's a parallel there between the Red Skull and Cap that I don't think is fully explored in this movie. It's sort yeah. of like left, and I don't know if that's something that was originally there and they cut around it, because I do think this movie comes in at 2 hours and does a lot, and I feel like it probably had some scenes edited out and cut around. And I wonder, it really makes me wonder what Hugo Weaving, like what would have been better if they'd given Hugo Weaving a little more to do.
Yeah. It could probably stand to be a good 2 hours and 15.
Yeah, I think so too. Because it follows the Marvel formula at that point. It was like the end is just boom, boom, blam, blam, like so much action happening just to like feed that, like, oh yeah, don't forget this is an action Marvel movie. But they could have had, like, besides him just being like, I'm bringing you back to my thing to tell you my entire plan and be in Valvillainy when I could have had you killed when you were surrounded by 40 people, like the villain thing, he brings him in, then they have their big fight. Their big fight at the end lasts for a really long time.
Yeah, it's like a half hour
long.
At least of like, okay, we're here. Now the set piece moves into the hangar, and now it moves into the plane, and now it's on the outside of the plane, kind of, and now we're back in the plane.
Everywhere, all over the place. I'm like, oh my God.
Hmm. Yep.
It's interesting, because that's something I always have a problem with when so much of the movie is the fight scenes. But I guess for me, this one has enough variety. Like you say, it's like the sort of compound. It's Cap fighting by himself. Then he gets like brought in with the cavalry, like swinging through the windows. Mm-hmm. Then it's them running. And then you get a good bit of like comedy relief with Tommy Lee Jones. I'm not kissing you. great, great lines.
Let's go find two more, shall we?
Yeah. And I always get nervous. And I, still, even this, like watching it so long later, and after I've seen it 10, 15 times probably, when he gets dropped from the ship, I'm always surprised. I always forget that he has to like pilot that missile back into the ship. I always like, wait, how's he gonna get back? Like, it really like worries me for whatever reason. It's just weird. But anyway, there's enough variety there. That scene doesn't bother me. And then I guess it really like, it really hits me hard because they end it. The last thing that happens is him making the sacrifice, you know, like him deciding to go into the ice.
Gotta put it in the water.
Which you're still just like, why didn't you jump out? Like, and I love that they have that as the cut scene in Endgame where Rhodey, you know, that's the most Philly thing to do to somebody too, to just be like, well, why don't you just jump out, you idiot? You know, and it's just like, well, that doesn't make sense. And like watching the whole train heist with Bucky again, that shit doesn't make sense either. I was like, in retrospect, this isn't a really great plan. Why didn't you just blow the train up? Like, what were you guys doing?
I think they wanted to capture Zola.
Yeah, but it's just, I don't know. They're like, let's swing down onto it while it's moving. Like, why don't you wait till that train hits a stop and then get it? I don't know. I was like, I know Bucky had to lose Bucky, and Bucky had to lose an arm. I get it. But just like, I don't know. We could have thought this one through a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a bold plan for sure. It is a very like, and bold, you know, rhyming with stupid a little bit.
But you know what's not stupid?
What's that?
Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service.
Yeah.
Meal delivery service.
That is not stupid.
It is not stupid. It is great for lazy people like me.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
It's perfect, man. That's why we order so much, because we'll get home, we'll sit around, you're tired from work, all of a sudden it's like 7:30, and you're like, oh no, I don't want to cook now, so you'll order something, it doesn't come for another 45 minutes, now you're having a pizza or whatever at 9:30,
and then you go right to bed. Something that's terrible for
you. Yeah, terrible, like just quick pick it, you know? That's why Factor's great.
Do you remember when you were a kid and you had those like those freezer meals? This is the best version of that.
Right.
Because it's like, it's actually chef prepared, dietitian approved, ready to eat meals, and they deliver them straight to your door. They're ready in just 2 minutes. All you got to do is heat them and eat them. You don't have to do any of the meal planning, grocery shopping, chopping, prepping, cleanup, none of it. And they're fresh, never frozen, come straight to your door. They've got 35 plus chef crafted meals every week that you can choose from. They've got calorie smart plans, vegan, veggie, protein plus. They've got everything around 550 calories or more. The pork chop that I had was kind of the best pork chop I've ever had.
Around the holidays, I mean, people are going to be calorie, you know, you're going to be eating. We're all going to be
calorie counting.
Calorie counting, and then you're going to be killing yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got so much more to plan on this holiday season. Don't worry about your food when you can just get it from Factor. Mm-hmm. So this December, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered straight to your door, ready in just 2 minutes, no prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/MCU50 and use code MCU50 to get 50% off. That's code MCU50 at factormeals.com/MCU50 to get 50% off.
And don't forget, they have breakfast items, lunch, cold pressed drinks, shakes. Like, go get it. Why are you even still here? Go do it right now.
Right this second. Get out of here.
Get out of here.
Or listen to this while you're ordering.
Oh, yeah. Wait, we still have a little bit more to talk about. So stay here and then go.
Take us in with your ears while your fingers travel to factormeals.com/MCU50.
It must have been funny watching, not knowing what happens to Bucky, because that scene's really quick. Like, I knew that. We all, like, if you read the comics or whatever, knew he was going to be the Winter Soldier. We didn't know whether they were going to do it or not. But they do breeze over his death. Like, there's not even, like, a moment. He falls off the train. He's gone. There's not even, like, a, oh, no, it's just Bucky. And then we're right to the next scene. I'm like, wow, they're really not holding on this.
Well, they do, though.
Later, when we find out he can't drink.
Yeah.
They would have reversed it. I would have been like, I'm sorry, what did you say? You didn't tell me about that when you put those needles in me that you didn't tell me about before either. Get this out of me.
I have to be able to get drunk. Yeah. I just lost a friend. I just lost my best friend.
My Bucky.
Yeah, that was really funny. Actually, I thought that scene was really interesting because, I kept thinking through this whole movie, like how when they have these quiet moments and how that's sort of been lacking lately. And particularly like Ragnarok and the Marvels. And in that scene, I thought it was interesting. They kind of do this interesting balancing thing where like that scene is really quiet and really like mournful for Bucky and really sad to see Cap the way he is. And it builds the relationship. Like it does all these important things, but it also talks about him not being able to drink, which like I feel like for certain types of nerds, like there's like it's like building the canon at the same time, you know what I mean? Like you're getting this like really touching moment, but they're also explaining how his powers work. They're like in the middle of this incredibly touching, sad moment, she says to him, "Your metabolism works at 4 times the rate of other people's," and it's like that is a sentence meant for like us nerds for a future to think about when we're watching these movies.
Like we're scribbling things down. Like, oh man, times. He could probably eat.
How much does he eat?
Oh, he's got to eat a huge steak every meal, right?
Whole chickens.
Entire chickens.
Stuffed with peanut butter.
Mm-hmm. Chickens stuffed with peanut butter. That's exactly what he eats.
Trying to get gains, man.
That's like his Kong dog treat. He uses whole chickens stuffed with peanut butter.
Listen.
That's how you give him medicine.
If I'm
going
to be 6'4 and jacked, I'll eat as many chickens as you want me to eat.
Right?
That's why he's like, don't touch that dial. I'm fine. I'm going to be 6'4.
Yeah. Don't. I can do this.
I got
Please.
It.
I'm going to be so much taller.
My favorite Peggy moment is her not being able to control herself from almost touching his chest. Like, from, that's all of us. Just like, oh, wait. Whew.
That was actually her. That was Hayley Atwell having that reaction. Like, that wasn't Peggy. Yeah. That wasn't in the script. That was completely ad-libbed. Her going, like, oh, my. And they were like, keeping that. Let's keep that.
Yep. Definitely keep that. It's a really funny moment. And it's lovely that she, like, just had to, the actress had to reach out and, like, almost touch him. It's really
good.
Did you see his?
Yeah. They're like, he oiled him up. So I like the scene with Bucky where he can't take a hint and get the hell out of there after she comes into the bar with her best, her best red dress on and she's talking to Steve. You're like, hey,
red dress.
Bucky, take a hint, man. Get out of here.
I love that Bucky was like, I'm invisible.
So jealous.
I'm becoming you. It's a nightmare.
So mean.
It's so mean. I love it so
Little
much.
Did we know. Mm-hmm. That later he would also become a super soldier.
I know.
Yep.
He's still no Cap, though. Bucky is Bucky, you know?
Yeah, Bucky is very much Bucky.
God, I love Winter. I cannot wait to get to Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. I was like, Cap who? For the first 15 minutes of that movie.
Oh, yeah, because of the...
Oh, the hair and the black
the
eyes.
The hair and the mask.
I was like, oh, wait a minute. Bucky's back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Their relationship in this one, like, I know, obviously, it's like a cornerstone for the entire series, but like... Thinking about the fact that both his parents are dead, And like, I knew that, but like, it just like this time it kind of resonated with me. Yeah, every superhero.
I mean, it's all orphans. How they all start. Parents are dead. Yeah, superhero.
Like thinking about that moment and the parents being dead and like how he's living in that little apartment and it, like he's just by himself. Steve is by himself and like Bucky is his family, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's thinking about that time period too when so many people are off at war and so many people are contributing to the war effort that it's like just this like bond between them and he's leaving too and like everyone he knows is going off to war and he can't do it. It's just such a beautiful beginning to his story and it's just, yeah, I love it.
You know what's great that I didn't notice until this rewatch?
Ooh, what?
Is that Cap's, Steve's dad was in, like, Steve's dad died of mustard gas. He was in the 107th.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asking to get put into that unit. But then Bucky got his orders and was put into that unit.
Mm-hmm.
The 107th.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. No, I didn't notice that either.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's pretty neat.
And then that's the unit that got
that he saves.
Ambushed and captured and all of that.
Yep.
And I love that Stark never stops looking for him. I mean, because when they found him, he would have been dead by then, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they still had people out kind of looking for something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least body recovery.
Yeah, it's a really, really... Stark is such an interesting character, and he goes on to be interesting in the Agent Carter series, where he's just like, he's just so he's Tony, you know, he's just so brash and funny and like...
He's pre-Tony Tony.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he's so like, when he believes something is right, he will do it to the end of the world. You know, like he believes that looking for Tony's the right, or looking for Steve's the right thing to do, he's going to keep looking for Steve. And it's just really, really a great character establishing moment when he's like,
yeah.
They're like, but we found the energy source. We
cool. We got the Tesseract. Yeah. Let's keep looking.
Yep. That's why I like the end so much because it's like S.H.I.E.L.D. They're so dramatic. Them and their theatrics. Like, why? I don't know why they thought that was going to work. But Cap had their number. I thought Cap was going to put that girl through a wall. I was like, you better take a step back, sis.
Ma'am, you need to be careful about what you say.
I know it can't be for the structure of the scene, but because she's like has the long kind of reddish curly hair or whatever, I always think it's like, I always think like it should have been Natasha in that scene.
I would have loved that, to be honest.
I would have loved it, but it would have like given away it too soon or something. Like there's a, like nice something nice about it being like, we don't know what's going on. We know that he's likely in the future because of the way the structure of the movie, but like, we don't know what's going on. It's sort of this, like, it does kind of put you in this uncomfortable place. But every time I rewatch it, I think about her being Natasha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. Well, but that also wouldn't, like, fit her character necessarily. Like, it would have given it away for us, but also, like, she wouldn't be in that situation. She's a spy.
I don't know.
I mean, she did it with Banner.
Well, she was bringing in Banner for that one situation. Like she's like infiltrate and interrogate and extract information kind of person, not like take care of this guy and gently ease him into modern day. Like that just doesn't seem like her. Like I'm betting that nurse or that seeming nurse was probably an agent who was also a medic and potentially also just a nurse that was like told you need to dress like this because we're making this sure this guy thinks he's back then.
I think it's the right call. And I think it also would have made S.H.I.E.L.D. feel smaller if like the only agents we ever see are our main six or whatever. But like, I just always think it, and it's purely the hair color. Like I don't think it has anything to do with anything else. It's just the hair color. Sure. I'm like, hey, that should be her. No, it shouldn't. Yeah. It shouldn't be.
I think they were purposely trying to make her look like Peggy. They're like, oh, who has brown hair? Oh. You get up here, get in there.
Did she have brown hair? I thought she had kind of a reddish hair.
I thought it was like a dark brown.
Okay.
Like a little, Auburn. Like an Auburn.
Okay, cool. Well, so where does this one sit now that you're upon a rewatch? Like, I don't know how many times I'm going to say this, and I don't know, I may have said it already in this rewatch, but like, I think this is still just one of my favorite Marvel movies. Like, it's top.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah. It's really, really good.
It holds such a special place in the heart.
I forgot that the end credit scenes for this one is just a trailer for Avengers. Mm-hmm. And I remembered watching it again. I was like, oh my God, do you know how excited I was when I saw that?
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh my
and, like,
God.
And like, we had to wait an entire year
but
for that?
But it was only 1 year. It wasn't so bad.
Well, that's the thing. Like, thinking about that and then thinking about like the idea of being a year until the Avengers comes out feels so weird to me now. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw it like that next summer, and I was like, man, next summer, that feels such a long time. To be in a time pre-Avengers, before this, like before Marvel was really put on the map. Like, Avengers is what made Marvel this interconnected universe, and like it launched a million other franchises to do the same thing. Like, Avengers is that moment, and it's just weird to think about, like, this watching this in 2011 and being like, not knowing, like, that looks cool, it's gonna have all these characters I love in it, but not knowing how it would like change the face of movies for the next 15 years. Like, it's kind of crazy to think about.
I love it. I love what we're doing.
I really think that the five movies before the Avengers are like, that's like the Mount Rushmore, you know, of the MCU. Is like, they're the founders, right? They're the
Hulk?
That's even what Hulk? Started it. Yeah, even Hulk, even the Incredible Hulk. Yes.
It's hard for me to put it on a Mount Rushmore, but like,
we'll just put a little plaque up for Hulk.
And Hulk.
As much as, you know, obviously they've carried over now Blonsky and Ross, and now they're bringing back Betty Ross for the new one. Like, all these things are happening, and they've connected it now a lot more than it was for a while. But for a long time, like, that movie was so unimportant. To like they could have just jumped into Mark Ruffalo's version in and just been like, oh yeah, everybody's seen the 70s Hulk show or whatever, and like, we know what the Hulk is.
Eric Bana one.
Or the Eric Bana one. It's sort of the thing now where like they bring in Spider-Man and he's just already Spider-Man, and then they do that with the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk as well, but like, the Hulk is not necessary as an establishing movie in my mind. Like, it just isn't.
Agreed.
They had to make sure that we didn't connect Mark Ruffalo Hulk to Eric Bana Hulk. And they, you know, they gave us the speed bump of Edward Norton.
Yeah, but they still had a different actor, so it doesn't really even like do that. No.
And I guess weird. Like, I like Edward Norton so much.
Edward Norton was also like being a dick on set. So like,
Well, honestly, if it was that he wanted to have a better script, was he the dick? I'm sorry, but that movie's not written really well. We could go back and forth with this forever.
Yeah, sure. we did on our Incredible Hulk watch. It was like the idea that that movie's not as good as the other four in this phase one, I think. It's like, I think it's pretty, like, I'm not saying it's terrible, it's not trash.
You won't like me when I'm hungry. I was like, somebody please put my head underwater and don't bring me back up until I've passed out.
Hey, Hydra.
Literally.
Just feed me one of those like Fizz Colas or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, and then we have our cute little Stan Lee cameo, which we've been talking about all of his in the other ones.
I thought he'd be taller.
I was like, you adorable little man.
So good.
I miss him so much.
I know.
All right. Well, love it. Love this movie. Anybody have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Avengers is next, right?
Avengers is next.
Okay, I'm thrilled. I can't wait. I feel like this is what it's been leading to.
I feel like this might be like a two-parter or something. Like, Avengers is such a big love to do these every Monday until Christmas. because then we could drop this on really close to Christmas, or drop Iron Man 3.
Is Iron Man 3 the one after Avengers, or is it Winter Soldier and then Iron Man 3?
It was Iron Man 3 was next,
and then immediately after
for the Dark World and then Winter Soldier.
Yeah, it's a while.
I just want to get to Winter Soldier.
Haley
wants to be on that one.
Oh, sweet.
Too. Yeah, I was like, yeah, girl.
Yeah, she's welcome. It'd be awesome. Okay, well, thanks, guys, for joining us. We'll be back soon with more Infinity. We're going to really try to, like I said, step it up with the Infinity Saga rewatch in the next few weeks, because I really would love to do a Christmas time watch of Iron Man 3. And and we've got What If coming. We're going to do a daily episode about What If as best we can. So we'll be in your feed a lot. So don't leave. You know, I know Loki's over and we got a long break on all the content, but like, hang out. We got a lot of good Marvel stuff coming.
We're still having fun.
Happy freaking holidays.
Happy holidays, guys. Yeah.
Peace.
Until next time, true believers.
Bye.
Hey. You just listened to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast from Stranded Panda. I really hope you liked it. Let me just say a big thank you to all of our supporters on patreon.com/mcucast. You are the lifeblood of our little operation here, and a huge, huge thank you to our insanely generous Illuminati tier patrons, Walter Kreisky III, Lieutenant Bongo, and Jazz Viz. You guys are amazing. If you'd like to see our beautiful faces, you can catch a video version of many of our episodes at youtube.com/strandedpanda. Love you 3,000, my friends.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.